Despite the disasters and chaos from bad communications, Red Army units continued to fight back. They made the most of night raids, since an attack during daylight immediately brought a response from the Luftwaffe. The German company commander, who kept a diary in the 384th Infantry Division, recorded on the 2nd of August, "Russians resisting hard. These are fresh troops and young." And again the next day, "Russians resisting hard. They are getting reinforcements all the time. One of our sapper companies avoided battle. Very shameful." His own soldiers then began to suffer badly from stomachache, perhaps due to contaminated water. "It's terrible here," he wrote a few days later. "Such terrifying nights. Every single one of us is tense. One's nerves don't stand a chance." In an attempt to counter Luftwaffe air superiority, Red Army aviation regiments were transferred hurriedly from the central and northern fronts. A regiment of night fighters, landing for the first time at a new base to support the Stalingrad front, discovered that their aerodrome was no more than a large field planted with watermelons and surrounded by tomato plants, which the local peasants continued to harvest, even while fighters landed and took off. The regiment's presence was soon spotted by a Focke-Wulf reconnaissance aircraft, and when strafing Messerschmitts came in just above ground level, the adjacent peasant market was caught in their fire. In an instant, the rural scene became one of total chaos, with panic-stricken horses rearing in the shafts of wagons, children screaming, awnings ripped by machine-gun bullets, and stallholders killed among their fruit and vegetables. Less damage was done to the night fighter regiment, which found itself forced to maintain an exhausting schedule of sorties. Often there was no time to eat at the field kitchen by the side of the runway, so ground crew would bring plates out to the aircraft at dispersal, and pilots ate in their cockpit. The rules of security, drummed into the ground personnel by commissars, were so absolute that they never counted the number of aeroplanes on the field, or even how many failed to return from a mission. In the confused air skirmishes at this time, Major Kondrashov, the commander of the regiment, was shot down behind German lines. His left leg, which he later lost, was mangled in the crash, but a peasant woman who lived nearby managed to drag him clear of the wreckage and care for him in her house. The site had been marked by fellow pilots from his regiment, and soon after dawn, two of them landed by her house. They carried Kondrashov out and bundled him into the rear seat of one of the aircraft. The pilot then flew him to a military hospital. Aerial dogfights over the Don during those last days of July and early August attracted the attention of the whole battlefield below. German infantrymen and panzer crews alike would shade their eyes with a hand against the sun, peering up at the blue sky and vapour trails. Russian aircraft generally attack ground targets at midday. It was such a regular run that Messerschmitt 109s would often make sure that they were around, ready to jump them. There were cheers whenever an enemy machine was hit, and the stricken aircraft, pouring smoke, corkscrewed down and exploded on the ground. The reputation of star fighter pilots began to grow within the German army, as well as the Luftwaffe. In this war of movement, the staffs of panzer and motorized divisions seldom bothered to have their headquarters camouflaged. Working in hastily pitched tents through the night on new sets of orders, or checking ammunition and casualty returns, they found that their spirit lamps attracted swarms of insects, not enemy bullets. They caught up on sleep during the day, their heads nodding and rolling around as the headquarters vehicles moved to the next location. The commander of the 16th Panzer Division, General Hans Huber, would take a nap in the middle of a battle in front of his staff, thus inspiring confidence in his unflappability. Papa Huber, as he was known to his troops, made an immediate impression with his powerful, solid face and black artificial hand, having lost an arm in the First World War. Huber was a creature of firm habit and organisation. Battle or no battle, he made sure that he ate regularly every 3 hours, consuming so many calories and vitamins. Although no intellectual, he was a brilliant, clear-thinking man, according to more than one officer who knew him well. Hitler admired him greatly as a soldier, but because this old warhorse was a realist who said what he felt, The Führer considered him too pessimistic towards the end of the Battle of Stalingrad.